There's drama in Hotlanta. There's a win streak resuming in Boston. There's a team in Dallas we don't know what to make of. And hey, Kawhi and PG and Harden are back. Lots to talk about on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, source for all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen. We appreciate you guys being on board and making us part of your day, part of your week, part of your lives. Appreciate everyone being with us. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, co-host of Locked On Nuggets. I'm joined by David Ramil. He's co-host of Locked On Heat. You can find him on Twitter at DRamil13. David, how you doing on a Monday night after a pretty good night of hoops in the association?
A little tired, but ready to talk some basketball as always with you, Matt.
All right, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Let's go ahead and get started and break down what happened in the association, and not only on the court, but off. And boy, do we have a juicy drama going on in Atlanta. All right, so on Sunday, Sean Sharania of The Athletic, along with Sam Amick, report that on Friday, Trae Young was getting treatment on his shoulder. And Nate McMillan, coach of the Hawks, walks in and says, hey, you going to go ahead and be in shoot around and play tonight? And Trae says, I'm going to get treatment and probably not shoot around, and we'll see how I feel, and maybe I'll play. And there was apparently some disagreement there. And at the crux of it is that Nate McMillan, who's from a different generation of players, very much felt that, look, if you're going to play, you need to go through shoot around. And Young, being from a very new generation of players, was like, no, because I'm Trae Young, and they literally do whatever I want here. And not really. That wasn't in the report. That's my own interpretation of it.
Verbatim, so, what he wrote. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is this was the issue of dispute. McMillan reportedly said, if you don't go through shoot around, you can come off the bench, or you can not play at all. And it reportedly was like, don't come. And McMillan refuted that on Monday. Trae Young addressed the comments and the situation. McMillan addressed the situation. It was what you would expect, which is like, you know, this stuff happens and we want to keep it behind closed doors, and it's unfortunate it got out, which both of them saying that is funny because guess what? It came from one of their representatives. But so, you know, we're just moving forward. This stuff happens. Trae Young says we're grown men. Nate McMillan said, like, no, Trae and I are good. We're all good. This stuff happens. It's fine. And refuted the part about telling. He said, I would never tell a player not to play. That's good. All this. So then Trae Young comes back on Monday. No repercussions. He doesn't come to the game at all on Friday. They face the Nuggets. Trae Young does not go to the arena. Trae Young does whatever Trae Young does in his free time. They beat the Nuggets without Trae Young and John Collins. And then on Monday, Trae Young comes back and they lose to the Thunder. David, this is the most NBA regular season in 2022 story I can possibly imagine.
Fantastic, isn't it? It's a tough one to swallow. I know you've made this point via Twitter, and I think it's something worth bringing up to our listeners. What camp did it leak from? Like, who benefited from this story? Because as far as I can tell, this doesn't really, I don't think it benefits anybody. Does it clear McMillan, or does it just show that, you know, he has some tension with their star player, and, you know, he's already a replacement coach for Lloyd Pierce, and yes, he's had a good run there, but I'm not sure that this kind of situation benefits him, nor does it benefit him to be made public. And it doesn't seem like it benefits Trae either, because it seems like the fan base is turning on him to some degree. So I don't know exactly where that information would come from, which is always important to keep in mind whenever whenever something is sourced like this and it's reported that pretty extensively already by now. And look, there was the instance with the reporter today where he was, he was very defensive. And I've seen some people defend him and say, oh, that's not a media's, that's not the media's job. That's not a reporter's job to keep pressing on him. When he says it's a private matter, you should move on. I disagree with that. Like, the reporter, I think, did a pretty fair job of saying, you know, we want a clear answer. You weren't even at the game. We've heard from the coach that he didn't tell you to skip out of the game completely. You missed it. And now you're back trying to tell us everything's fine. And Trey's canned answer was, well, it's a private matter. Leave it private. It's like, well, it's already not private. So why don't you just at least explain something for the benefit of the fan base so that they can understand what's going on? So this is a really complicated story here. And I know the team wants to sweep it under the rug, but maybe not, because somebody within the team made this public, whether, again, was to benefit Nate or to benefit Trey. I'm not quite sure, but this doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon either.
Trey Young was asked how he and McMillan will handle any future miscommunications, and Young responded, quote, "We'll figure that out."
Right. There you go. That explains everything, doesn't it?
Shams was on the FanDuel TV show that he does, and he called the dispute a, quote, "microcosm of the tension that's existed on the team." He did say that McMillan's job is safe, which, unfortunately, anytime that you tell me that a coach's job is safe, my immediate assumption is, well, that coach's job is not safe.
He won't be here by the All-Star break. How about that? Yeah. I think that seems pretty clear now.
So here's a couple of things that kind of add layers to it. If Chris Haynes had reported this, I would have assumed that this came from Trey Young, just because he has really close relationships with Clutch, right? So that would make a lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense for the front office to leak it. That doesn't make any sense. It just shows disagreement and tension between your coach and your star player. It exposes your star player to criticism, and it basically shows that your coach doesn't have any sort of power over his star player, which, news alert, none of them do. But that doesn't help them at all. So let's rule out the front office, okay? So now we're into McMillan versus Young. There's two lines of thought here. If Young leaked it, it was essentially to be like, yeah, no, McMillan tried a power move, and this is how spectacular it failed. Trey didn't even show up. If it's McMillan, it's basically saying, like, look what I'm having to deal with. So when this goes sideways, it's not my fault. It's Trey Young being Trey Young. Risky. Exposing your star player to criticism. Bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it plays out for him. Maybe there's always the possibility it was just like a third party that was just like, hey, I heard about this thing. Like, that happens, right? Like, just like somebody talked to somebody and Shams heard it and confirmed it along with Amick. So who knows where it actually came from? You have to ask the question, because sometimes there are pretty clear answers of where it came from. What I will say is, if you have to, in all of these situations, the most important thing is to look at the big picture. And you need to look at the big picture and go, Trey Young, essentially, because of his disagreement, that's why Lloyd Pierce was fired. Now, I don't think Lloyd Pierce was doing a great job. And I think Nate McMillan did a much better job after he took over. They've actually been pretty good if they can move past all the drama. John Collins has been on the trade block for 3 years. John Collins has had pretty open frustration at times with his role, and particularly his role next to Trey Young. He and Trey also hung out the summer and went to the pro-ams. So it's not like there's problem. Like, it's not like they hate each other. It's just like a complicated thing. Clint Capella, Bogdanovich, DeAndre Hunter, John Collins. Those four names have been consistently involved in trade talks for years, and especially last summer. And so, like, when I talk to people around the league, I continue to hear, like, they're the team. If I ask, like, well, who do you think makes a deal? Everyone's like, probably Atlanta, just because they're always probably the team. But they also haven't done it yet. I don't know how this is going to resolve itself. What I do know is that you need to try and avoid these types of situations. And it's not a good look for Young, just from the perspective of, it doesn't look like you're invested in, like, whatever needs to be done to get this team on the right track. Like, you get paid the most money. You have the most power. You got your buddy DeJounte Murray, who's been awesome, by the way. Gonna need to show a little bit of fake humility, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that you run the show, but I think it's pretty rough. And then that Thunder game, the Thunder really, like, this is a good example of the difference between these two teams, because the Thunder obviously were way out talented, and the Hawks had a lead, and the Thunder just, they are like a boxer that just keep you real close, and they work the body and they stay real close to you. And then when you're tired in that last round, it is 1-2 combo, and you are, by the time you realize what's happening, your head's hit the mat. Like, it was a really impressive win by the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to be an absolute monster.
And that seems like the perfect recipe for disaster for a team like Atlanta that seems to be falling apart and has internal strife and issues and things of that sort, especially on a night when Trey is as inefficient as he is wont to do at times. So what was his final stat line here? A whopping 6 of 19, so below 30% from him. 23 points on the night, of course, getting to the line frequently, 10 of 11, just 1 of 7 from three-point range. So that can't be attributed to any tension with Nate McMillan. But at the same time, to your point, like, that's just not a good look. As a star player, you've got to set an example, part of which includes you going through unfortunate shootarounds or going through practice or at least making the effort of being on the same page with your coach, because that's what you want the rest of your team to see and then follow by example. And so this is... I don't know. I mean, we're looking at, again, to a lot of the points you just brought up. We're talking about John Collins on the trade block for so long. Rest of the team being discussed in trades to varying degrees. Like, that just seems like a complete, unstable, cacophonous, just really bad mess of a team that just doesn't seem to have any clear purpose. And with the acquisition of Murray, that raised their stakes. They started off really well, and then they've cooled off considerably since then. And they had... I mean, as unrealistic as they might have been, they had some title contention hopes, and maybe they can turn it around. But it just seems like something keeps eating away at the core of what this team is, and that's where Trey is. He is the core of the team. He is their star player. Everything else around that team is built around him, including the acquisition of Murray, as you said. So when you've got him arguing with your coach, it's just not a good look, and I just don't see any way out for them. Because at this point, they've already replaced Pierce just a couple seasons ago. And like you said, McMillan has been fine in that capacity. But now all of a sudden, it seems like he's butting heads with Trey yet again here. And it just seems like it's the same recurring themes over and over again with no clear way out. So, I mean, you can't trade Trey, right? Like, he's part of your future there. He's a superstar. He's an all-star, et cetera. I think they want to commit to him and keep him as the core piece moving forward. So does it involve another firing? I mean, is that going to clear things up? No. If Trey is the problem, then I'm not sure how it's going to be corrected, and especially when you've got so much on the line, when you want to keep proving that this core built around Trey Young can not just make a deep playoff run, another deep playoff run, but also maybe even contend for the title at some point in the future.
And despite all that, they're 13-11. Because that's how the NBA is these days, where we got a lot of teams where we're like, boy, that's a mess. Oh, they're above 500 and better than some other teams. Weird. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to hit on a number of other topics in the league on Monday night. We'll talk about how Milwaukee got another win in its column. We'll talk about how Kawhi Leonard, Paul George return, and James Harden does, but there's very different results. We'll talk about all that and more when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about Prize Picks. So here's what's great about Prize Picks is you're not going to have to play against FDS players that are DFS players that are just absolutely spending their entire day going through lineups and putting all these things together. You're just playing against the projections. Okay, you pick 2 to 6 players, and if they'll go score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, and you can win up to 25 times on any entry. And you can find all these great options, and you can cross sports, which is really great. They offer projections on any sport you watch: NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, college basketball, soccer. Got the World Cup going on. Why not get in on that on Prize Picks? WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, disc golf, Eurobasket, cricket, and more. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's just that easy. And they offer safe and fast withdrawals. And they're currently operational in over 30 states and Canada. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Thanks, man. making Locked On NBA your first listen today. For your second listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. Okay, second segment back here with David Ramil breaking down Monday's action in the NBA. Let's go ahead and talk about the returns of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George as they make their return on the road versus the Charlotte Hornets. Kawhi's been out for what seems like forever, but he's actually been out less than Paul George. Paul George is actually out slightly more games. So they come back tonight, and they really struggle with the Charlotte Hornets. They just really struggle with them. But ultimately, Kawhi finishes with 16 points on 15 shots, 6 boards, and 2 assists. PG goes for 19 points on 15 shots with 7 assists tonight, and they managed to squeak out a 119-117 win over the Charlotte Hornets. Look, this Clippers team continues to not be hitting on all gears. Like, it just looks very ragged in terms of what they're doing. But Kawhi hits the step back jumper with 1 second on the clock, doing the clutch stuff that he always does, and they do manage to get the win. And maybe like that's a good way to describe this. The Clippers are still not where they want to be, but Kawhi Leonard might be the difference between them winning and losing.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they won this game because of their bench. Like, John Wall and Nick Batum had fantastic nights. They provided the spark. They were out there, I think, when they wound up closing a gap, I want to say late in the third quarter, when Charlotte was actually up 9, and then they rattled off, I think it was an 11-2 run to propel them past the Hornets and to keep building from that point forward. So I think it was definitely a bench-led comeback for the Clippers. At the same time, you know, what team isn't going to be better without Kawhi Leonard and Paul George? But the question is, like, how long are they going to be healthy? How long are they going to be consistently available? And that's, it just makes it so hard to see what this team can possibly be. Obviously, they had high expectations. I'm not necessarily dashing those either, but it hinges so much on the availability of a player who just hasn't been very available for the last few seasons. And it's just, I don't even recall a time since 2019. What am I talking about? Like, he was on and off during that Raptors run. Yeah, he was fantastic in the playoffs. He had a magical run to the NBA Finals. And at the same time, he just hasn't played a whole heck of a lot since then. And I don't know how much he's going to be available this year either. And if Paul George is going to be facing similar issues, being on and off the court, or not necessarily available for long periods of time, I mean, how good can this Clippers team be? You know, how much can you count on them being consistently good enough, especially with the West being, you know, a fairly tightly contested race at this point? They're 3 games above 500, including a tough win tonight against the Hornets. But what do you see as the future for this Hornets team, at least in the short-term future this season? I'm sorry, not the Hornets, but the Clippers.
I was like, well, I think the Hornets are going to be bad.
Yeah, that's without a doubt. Sorry. They're plucky, but not good. Yeah.
Here's what's kind of interesting. All right, so their entire MO this season has been awesome defense, terrible offense, which is very weird. They were not shooting, nor taking, nor hitting threes this entire season. That's been like how they've been. So this game was kind of an outlier because this is a game where they couldn't get stops, but they go 15 of 36, pretty healthy from 3-point range, 42%. Like, that's much better, and that includes 2 of 8 from Marcus Morris. So, like, Paul George goes 2 of 4. Reggie Jackson goes 3 of 7. Luke Kennard goes 2 of 3. Batum, you mentioned, goes 4 of 6. Terrence Mann goes 1 of 2. Kawhi goes 0 of 3. First game back. Okay. I continue to be pretty high on this team. I've been really surprised by both the Clippers and the Warriors that everybody is like, oh, boy, those teams are in trouble. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, they're not so far down that they're out of it. And there's so much room left in the season. And I'm the guy that's always like, hey, these games count and they matter. And they do. Like, the Suns are getting a lead on them that is going to be tough for them to overcome for the division and for the top seed and for home court. Like, that stuff could wind up deciding a playoff series. The questions about Kawhi, I think, are there's a certain level to which it's kind of like with Trae Young, honestly, and with a lot of these teams, and Anthony Davis is part of this too. Sometimes you make your decision and you just got to live with it. You can't really, like, you can't pivot. There's not a better option to pivot to. Like, you can't blow it up and be like, well, this isn't going to work because Kawhi may not be healthy, or probably, even probably. You play for that chance. You play for that chance that you do get him and PG healthy and they do stay healthy for the duration of the playoffs. And then in that case, you have a switchable defense that I still think is probably the deepest in the league that has a much better vibe than it did when it lost in the bubble 2 years ago. and you have singularly in those clutch moments one of the scariest players on the planet in Kawhi George, who's probably underrated at this point in terms of what he can provide. I think that they're very – I think the infrastructure on the Clippers is good. I think that they're – the only thing they can really do is hope. I think it's fine for people to be like, I don't know that they're ever going to be healthy. I think it's a fine question. I don't know that – I feel the same way by Anthony Davis, where if you're like, is he going to miss more games? Probably. Yeah, probably. Is he going to be healthy in the playoffs? Boy, it's real iffy. Like 50-50 coin flip? But you take that because it's better than the alternative, which is knowing that your ceiling is below that. There are teams in the NBA where like their ceiling is below championship contention. They can play as well as they want and make as good of a run as they want, and they're not going to contend for a title. The Clippers are not in that group. So you risk it and you go through with it. Let's talk about the Sixers because, okay. So at least the Clippers got the win. It may have been dicey, but at least they got the win. The Sixers have been playing great defense. That's been like their entire thing during the stretch when they've been without Tyrese Maxey and James Harden. It's like their defense has been absolutely phenomenal. Well, Tyrese Maxey's still out, but James Harden returned on Monday night, and he played his old team in Houston, the Houston Rockets, and they lost 132 in double overtime, mind you, to the Houston Rockets, 132-123. The numbers on this game aren't as bad as maybe like that score would indicate because of all the points, right? Because you got to adjust for pace and you got to adjust for the double overtimes. But still, the Sixers give up a 119 defensive rating. They win their minutes with Joel Embiid. He was good because Joel Embiid's really good. Harden goes 4 of 19, including 4 of 11 for 3. He has 21 points on 19 shots. He gets to the line 10 times. 7 assists, but 7 turnovers for Harden in the return. This team is not going to be the same beast until it gets Tyrese Maxey back. And even then, like, if your best version of yourself is a team that plays great defense and you play James Harden, I don't know how you're going to make this work.
Yeah, fair point. I think it's by expecting people to, you know, expecting that team to just club you over the head offensively, right? I think that's the hope, is that you get Maxey, a great scorer, you get Embiid, if he stays healthy, and Harden, if they're all clicking as well as they can be, as they can, then I think that's a pretty high level and well-earned level of confidence that you can outscore any opponent. And that's fair. I mean, you're going to have to play some defense, but that's why you have a P.J. Tucker out there. You know, you're not too worried about his offense because he's not providing any anyway. So might as well just get him to do what he does best. And that's the hope for the bench as well, to be a good defensive unit for the most part. Look, I think, you know, that's a pretty consistent theme here, what we're talking about. We're talking about the Hawks. You know, you live and die by what you've got on your roster. That's Trae Young. You're not going to change things. You're not going to blow it up. You talked about the Clippers in the same theme. And now we're looking at it with the Sixers as well. I mean, this is the belief, right, that you can beat teams if you're healthy and if you've got Harden and Embiid and Maxey clicking at all cylinders. And I don't think that's unrealistic. I think that's the hope. And so you're going to have to try and do what you can and make the most of it and hope that they can stay healthy, that they can continue to build chemistry throughout the regular season. A loss to the Rockets in the grand scheme of things doesn't really mean anything because it's his comeback, it's his return. And so you could just say, oh, he was rusty and expectedly so, not that big a deal, and hope that they continue to play at a high level when the games do start to count later on in the season. But you can't afford to take too many chances. You can't afford to have too many losses like this over the course of the season, because as many teams are fighting for, you know, a very, very tightly contested Eastern Conference race there with the Hawks, the Heat, the Raptors, et cetera, all these teams kind of all in the mix and looking to continue to make a push over the next 20, 30 games or so, then the Sixers can't afford to risk too many of these losses over the creeping up over the regular season.
Finally, before we go to break, the Bucks get a bounce back win after the loss of the Lakers. They go ahead and take care, well, I guess they got one over the weekend, but they take care of the Orlando Magic on Monday. Chris Middleton goes 1 of 11. Chris's shot clearly still isn't back. He goes 0 of 7 from 3. This game was kind of interesting from the Magic perspective, which is the Magic starters won their minutes. So, like, Paolo Banchero was a plus 1. Mo Wagner was a plus 8. Franz was a minus 10 because he played with the bench unit as point guard. Markelle Fultz, who's been back for a couple of games, had 20 points, 5 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. Shot 8 of 18 for 20 points. Pretty good. The Magic were without Wendell Carter Jr. and Jalen Suggs, as well as Okeke and Mo Bamba. And they actually made a push back at the Bucks. This game was basically decided by a second quarter run where the Bucks bursted open and were able to kind of keep it there for the duration. This got close, and then the Bucks were able to close it out in the end. But I gotta tell you, I've been kind of waiting for the moment where the Magic start to look maybe like they're heading in the right direction. If they can get back to full health, this was actually a promising game. This will go completely under the radar to everybody but the diehards, but I actually think this was a promising step forward. Having a point guard back makes a real difference, I think, for the Orlando Magic team.
Bol Bol, a little disappointing. I know he's been the hot story of late, 1 of 4 from the field today in 19 minutes. Was he hurt, or why were his minutes so low? I didn't watch the game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, to be honest with you. He's gotten benched in a couple spots. I don't think there was an injury, but I'll check up on that when we go to break, which we'll do right now because we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the rest of the slate in the NBA on this Monday. We'll talk about the Celtics getting another win. We'll also talk about the Heat falling to the Memphis Grizzlies and touch on a couple of other things as well. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us, making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us on a Tuesday. No Bol Bol injury, by the way, just did not play. This honestly isn't kind of surprising because I've watched a couple of these games, and sometimes Mosley just kind of goes away from him. One of the advantages for Jamal Mosley is he doesn't have to go with everybody. He goes with whatever he thinks is going to work. Let's talk about I want to hear about your game because I didn't watch any of this one because I was watching the other ones. So the Memphis Grizzlies beat the Miami Heat 101-93 tonight without Ja Morant. Not necessarily shocking given that they were so good last year without Morant. Doing it without Morant and Desmond Bane, little bit surprising. What did you see from Miami tonight?
And Jaren Jackson Jr. also missed the game. So missing three starters there. Miami was really passive. They just were not very good. Coming off their best win of the season, knocking off the Boston Celtics on Friday in overtime, you thought they'd continue to build momentum. Jimmy Butler's healthy. Everybody's back. We're starting to hear that Victor Oladipo is nearing return, and so you're thinking they're going to continue to build on this momentum, but just as they have all season, they took one step forward and took maybe two steps back here. Not shooting the ball frequently. It was the points in the paint, really, that were the huge difference. Miami were just really, really passive. They saw the wall of Steven Adams and refused to attack it by any means necessary. Even Bam Adebayo, who's been much more aggressive and really, really good of late, a little bit more passive than normally. He just wasn't using his speed and quickness to try and get Adams at all. So they were just forced into this mid-range game, and they wound up only taking 79 total field goal attempts, which is not very good, of which they only hit 31 of those. And again, in the paint, only 24 points for them, 64 points in the paint for the Memphis Grizzlies. So a pretty huge disparity there. They were just constantly running the rim. Adams was great. Brandon Clark was great. Tyus Jones with a career high, 28 points. So really, really good night for him, too. And Miami just, again, I'm not sure what to make of this team because when we recorded today's show earlier today, I thought to myself, oh, this is a team that's, you know, showing they're trending in the right direction. They're going to get healthy. Everything's going to work out for them. And then they just kind of fall apart completely against this Memphis team. It might just be a bad matchup, but they lost in a way that they just haven't lost regularly, with Jimmy being very, very passive, not attacking much at all, which is very un-Jimmy-like. So I wouldn't be surprised to hear about some injury, perhaps, that'll keep him out of a back-to-back. And when Miami travels back after a four-game road trip, they come back to Miami to take on the Detroit Pistons on Tuesday night. So that should be interesting. But also their bench was really, really bad. Just 11 points for them. Max Strus was a no-show. Dwayne Dedmon, the only other center, maybe even the only center, period, on the roster, has been dealing with plantar fascia issues, and he was horrific. So not a great look for them either. So just a really, really ugly showing for the Heat, but a really great performance by the Grizzlies. Hats off to them. They were gutsy. They were great. And again, really, really good in the paint.
So we've seen the Nuggets without Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. knock off the Mavericks, who we'll talk about in a second. We've seen the Pistons without Cade Cunningham pull off some wins. This is not talked about enough in the NBA. It's like such a star-driven league, and every night I can point to you to a game where a team was a huge disadvantage, and they step up and they get the win because they play harder, because they're in a high motivation spot without their guys, and the other team's like, it's a letdown spot. Like, we got this. No Ja, no Bane, no Jackson. Also, I think this is an underrated thing. I talked to an assistant about this once, that you don't have the scouting report on some of the guys that you're going to play you weren't like you didn't pay attention because you were like, oh yeah, it's Jaren and Ja. Like, we got to do this X, Y, and Z, and you don't know. Like, you don't have the scouting report on a lot of these guys. It goes to show you the strength of the league. It goes to show you how good all these teams and players are. It just also goes to show you that the NBA regular season's a little random. Like, it just is a little random, and you got to kind of be okay with that. I have a stat for you, actually, David. I have a heat stat for you.
All right.
I looked at minimum 50 minutes played, five-man lineups. The first is the P.J. Tucker, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, Tybal, and Maxey lineup. Okay, that one's played 52 minutes. The Sun starters with Cam Johnson, who's out with injury, is second. Third, believe it or not, Kyle Lowry, Max Strus, Jimmy Butler, Caleb Martin, Bam Adebayo. 139.2 offensive rating, 108.6 defensive rating, a net of 30. It's appeared in 8 games for a total of 75 minutes. It only played 2 minutes tonight. So when the Heat are at full strength and they play certain lineups, it seems like there's something there. I thought that was pretty shocking, given that, like, I've just kind of been like, yeah, Miami's pretty mid this year. Like, they're just kind of a middle of the road team. Was impressed with that win on Friday versus Boston, shows their grit, but maybe the lineup says that if they can get everybody on the same page and get into a normal rotation with everybody healthy, I don't know if they're going to get there considering the deep playoff runs, but still kind of shows that maybe they're more dangerous. And maybe tonight was more of a blip than that.
Yeah, but you're talking about Strus being in those lineups, and Strus has been relegated to the bench since Tyler Hero returned back from injury. And I think that's part of the problem, too, is that Tyler incorporating him as a starter has been a definite work in progress. It's still not great. We've seen him kind of take an evolutionary step, at least for some games this year, where he's been more of a playmaker. And I think that's kind of bristled some of the older veteran players in the locker room that see him as mostly a scorer, and he sees himself as a scorer first, last, and always. So I think it's been kind of tough to get this best version of them. And Max, you know, he's more of a complimentary player because he's a good catch and shoot guy. He can do a little bit off the dribble, and he may play a slightly better version of defense than Tyler does. But again, that bar is pretty low. So he just seems to fit better as a starter, and then kind of sticking him on the bench without a clear playmaker. The rotations just haven't been great because, again, you don't have Victor Oladipo, who I think the expectation for him was that he was going to be the guy leading the bench unit now that Tyler's been promoted to the starting lineup. So I maintain belief that this Heat team, if they can click, again, maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm just being optimistic. I'm sure some will claim I'm being a homer, even though that's never been the case. I just think that if they do get everybody healthy, they can be dangerous because they do have enough depth and enough versatility. But there is definitely a lack of size in this roster. I think that was really, really exposed tonight. If you're counting on Dwayne Dedmon at his age dealing with injury issues, and you're going to have to deal with him a little bit longer until you make a trade, and again, December 15th looms large because he is eligible to be traded at that point, but who wants that contract? Omer Yurtseven out with surgery for a couple of months, so we're not going to get him back anytime soon. It just shows that, you know, Miami can be good, but they're probably, to your point, more of a middle-of-the-pack type team.
The Boston Celtics got another win. I don't have anything to add other than that. They got another win. They shot the lights out again. 49% from the field. They only shot 36% from three, which is still better than Toronto. 35.7. The only team I've seen that has actually slowed them down is Miami. And Miami got housed in the first matchup. So until Boston slows down shooting, they're going to continue to rack them up. Last thing I want to get to as we get out of here. Someone make the Dallas Mavericks make sense. So the Mavericks have lost to the Wizards without Bradley Beal, the Nuggets without Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. They've lost to the Orlando Magic. They've lost to the Magic without Paolo Banchero and the Detroit Pistons without Cade Cunningham. And they housed the Phoenix Suns tonight. They blitzed the Phoenix Suns tonight. They eradicated the Phoenix Suns tonight. Now, the comment will be, well, the Suns were on a back-to-back. The Suns have been really good under Monty Williams on a back-to-back. I know this because I had money on the Phoenix Suns because they've been really good on back-to-backs. But they take care of them 130-111. This game was never close. The Mavericks ran them out of the building from the opening jump. this Mavericks team, to me, like, if I'm a Mavericks fan, I'm even more infuriated and concerned, because what this shows you is, like, yeah, they're a random win generator that on a Monday night in December, they can knock off the Suns and look like world beaters and absolutely trounce the Phoenix Suns, even without Chris Paul. Still a really good team with Devin Booker. They can absolutely dominate them. And then on a Wednesday, they can lose to whoever they face next. Like, I don't know what to expect night to night from this Dallas Mavericks team. It's wild, David.
I saw a tweet over the weekend, which is never really a good frame of reference or even a good conversation starter, but I think it's interesting in talking in context of what we are here, that I don't know that there's any player, at least this is how the tweet was, that has a greater discrepancy between they're really good when they're really good and when they're really bad than Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, that's a player that when he's on point, it's just really a great addition and perfectly complimentary of a guy like Luka Doncic, who is a generational type player. He was solid tonight, not spectacular, 5-15 from the floor, but 5-8 from 3-point range. So all of his made field goals from 3-point range, had 21 points. And that seems like that's the kind of burst they needed. But there are nights when he's the other end of the spectrum, much, much worse than that. And perhaps that's partly why you can explain why they can be so great one night against Phoenix and then so bad against, you know, again, a Wizards team without their star player. I don't have any other explanation for it. I don't think even Dallas fans or Dallas media have any kind of explanation for it. I haven't seen enough of them to say, oh, yeah, because again, one night I turn into them and it's like, oh, they're really bad. That's strange. And it doesn't seem like anything pops out necessarily. And then you have a night like tonight where they're really, really damn good and you go, well, there's something there. Maybe they are capable of still going on a deep playoff run. So if you had to bet, and you just said that you would you bet on this Mavericks team to be a dangerous playoff team once the postseason kicks in? Or would you err on the side of caution and say they're more likely to be the uglier Dr. Jekyll version of themselves? Or Mr. Hyde, rather, sorry.
I think that they can make a deep playoff run because I think the West is really vulnerable. I think the Warriors are really good and they're screwing around in the regular season. I think the numbers reflect that.
That's what they do.
I think the Clippers will probably, you know, the Clippers, we don't know if they're going to be healthy. I think the Suns will be there, but Dallas has shown a real ability to not only in the playoffs, but they got this win tonight. They lost to them on opening night, but they had a huge lead on opening night in Phoenix. So there's something there with that matchup. And I think they played the Nuggets tomorrow. It'll be an interesting matchup. The Nuggets are in a little bit of disarray. So I'll be curious to see how that one shakes out. I think Dallas, as long as they can get into the dance, I think they can be fine. The worry that you have to be, and the team I always compare these kind of squads to, is the Washington Wizards with Wall and Beal, where like they were within they were really close to knocking off the 2015 Hawks, and they would have faced the 2016 Cavaliers without Kevin Love and Kyrie, or the 2015 Cavaliers, sorry, without Kevin Love and Kyrie. And the Wizards just didn't take care of business. The following season, they talked themselves up as this big bad team. They really bought into themselves as being legit, but they didn't take it seriously night to night. You get yourself in positions to be healthy by taking care of the bad teams and building a good win profile. Being this random, I think, can have long-term concerns for where they get to. But yeah, They've also got Luka. So,
have you heard any discussion about a potential trade down the line here? Because I mean,
all I'll say is that Dallas, I know, has. I've heard that Dallas has asked around about the usual suspects, right? That they've been interested in various conversations. I think Tim Hardaway Jr. is probably the piece that they're looking most aggressively to move, and probably one of the bigs. But we'll see if they get a buyer for that. The market's still, I think, pretty stunted at this point. I haven't heard anything substantive as far as Dallas goes.
So what, like Hardaway and McGee? Oh, sorry. I was going to say Hardaway and McGee for like John Collins. Is that like a possibility there?
I wouldn't. It makes a lot of sense, but I haven't heard that directly, but it would make a lot of sense. I think that I know Dallas has been interested in Collins for years. So
we'll see
if they can pull it off. That's going to wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for being part of the show. Make sure to check out tomorrow. You got Jake Madison, John Corrales breaking everything down. John doesn't have a Celtics game to gloat over. and then on Wednesday, you can catch Path of Designer and Nick Angstadt. And on tomorrow's Wednesday. And that's Thursday's show. And then Friday, you got Adam Mares and Wes Goldberg breaking down Thursday night's action in the NBA. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We'll see you guys again next time. Thanks for joining us on Locked On NBA.